Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, February 21st, and it's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 10, first paragraph, he talked for hours, through two paragraphs, ending with Winchester Cathedral came back again, and the comments will be on both those paragraphs. And today's readers are The 12 Steps, Rachel P., The 12 Traditions, Libby E., and the readers of the text are Pia S., Ellen D., and Robin Jo B. will be our backup person. The share ID for Wednesday, February 20th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 12,574. That's 12574. And for the Thursday, February 21st meeting, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,578. That's 12578. And our newcomer greeter at the end of the meeting, 10 till the hour, will be Melanie C. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Rachel P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, my fellows. This is Rachel P., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. The 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service. I pass.
Thank you, Rachel P., and I will now ask Libby E. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you,
Libby.
Mo. Good morning. I'm Libby E. I'm a recovering compulsive eater in New York. The 12 traditions. 1, common welfare should come first. Recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except the matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend
Please
the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Let problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for an opportunity to be of service. Atas.
And thank you, Libby E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics.
Well, that's about my little story. I was masturbating to lesbian porn, and my daughter happened to walk in on me while I was stroking like a demon.
Sorry about that, guys. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing. And that you
done a last stroke about to shoot a load, and my daughter walked in on me, and she busted me jerking off.
Reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 10, starting with the first paragraph. He talked for hours through two paragraphs ending, Winchester Cathedral came back again. And the comments will be on both those paragraphs. And I will now ask Pia S. to get us started. Good morning, Pia.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service. This is Pia S., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays, way over there on the hillside. There was that proffered temperance pledge I never signed. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings. His insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. His fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral, came back again. And I am not an historian, and there's so many people that know so much about Bill, and I am just going to share what comes up for me today. And when I am rude, when I have emotions that I don't want to, like, really let come up, when they well up in me, I swallow hard. And it sounds here that Bill, he is he's softening. These paragraphs talk to me about surrender. And up until now, Bill has been this tough guy. And now he's in the process of admitting defeat. And his mind is opening up. This is because he's hopeless. He feels moved, and that there is something that is being touched inside of him. He's starting to believe that there is something bigger going on here, because he sees it in Abby. And I have glimpses, and I had glimpses of God in the past. Like, I felt the connection. And looking back now, I can see how I was held many times. And also that God tried to push me in the right direction, but I wasn't listening. I was searching for something, but I had a lot of prejudices, and they talk about here. So it wasn't until I came into program I finally gave in and started trusting in that power. And the 12 steps got me to a level of awareness of this power, and that power had been there all along. These steps uncovered and recovered that lost connection that I'd buried with like tons of food. So because of action, because of abstinence and doing the steps, I now have a working relationship with a higher power that is always there for me. And it's helping me live a sane and good life. I'm feeling very moved today, and I'm so grateful for this meeting that we do the book, like we read the book so thoroughly, and it's helped me a lot. So I'm just thankful for that, and thank you for letting me do service, and I'll pass.
And thank you, PS, for getting us started, and I will now open the lines up for those who'd like to share on these two paragraphs.
Shannon S.
Shannon S.
Janice PM.
Janice PM.
Terry H.
Terry H.
Rebecca T.
Rebecca T.
John K.
John K. Oh, you're being so good to me today. Love it. Two more? One more?
Marilyn T.
Marilyn T.
Robin P.
Robin P. Okay, we'll stop there. That was easy peasy. Shannon S., Janice PM, Terry H., Rebecca T., John K., Marilyn T., and Robin P. Janice S., will you please get us started? I mean, Shannon.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thanks, Mo.
Yeah.
Good morning. This is Shannon S., a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic in New York. Thanks, Mo, for your service. Thanks, everybody, for service and being here. The things that I thought about here in listening were, first of all, that that pro-offered temperance pledge I never signed. And it got me thinking, actually, in high school, that when I played on a specific sports team, our coach made us sign something saying that we weren't going to drink. And I mean, we were teenagers, so that should have gone without saying, but you know, that was we were a different crew, and we hemmed and hawed and didn't want to sign it. And then it led me to thinking about all the things that those pledges that I made for myself. You know, some of them that I even did sign that I wrote out, you know, I'm not going to eat this, or I'm only going to eat that, or I'm not going to eat before this time. All these things attempting to control my eating and my ingesting of things to try to control the problem, which at that point I had no clue it was a disease, you know, and that a pledge wasn't going to help that. And then I think about, you know, Bill, who had all these different pledges in his Bible, you know, that his wife would write out and have him sign, or that he would write in, and those didn't work either. And then in terms of a higher power, you know, he's really reflecting here about what he saw and learned from his grandfather. And so for me, I saw and learned a lot from my parents in terms of religion. I went to religious school for a lot of my education, and I took on their God. You know, and so when I came, when I was older and I was at rock bottom and knew I needed a higher power, I was swallowing hard too, because it was like, oh my gosh, I can't go back to that higher power. That higher power was not loving, and there was no connection. And then in a few pages, Abby's going to tell Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And for Bill and for me, when I got that revelation, I mean, that was like revolutionary. Wait, I can choose my own conception. I can, quote unquote, stray from what I've been taught. You know, I thought that was disloyal. I thought that was totally against the rules, you know, like this is the God and this is the religion. It was about the religion. This is what I have to stick with because this is what I've been taught and this is what my people told me is right. But once I was able to realize that I had freedom here and I could find a God that didn't make me swallow hard and instead welcomed me and hugged me hard, you know, that changed everything. So, so important for me to realize, being that I'm a rule follower, I'm a type A and I'm a firstborn, to remember that some of these quote unquote rules, they're only rules that exist within my own mind. And, if I can just, thank you. If I can just have a little perspective, then God can open my mind to many new possibilities. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you, Shannon S. Janice PM, followed by Terry H. Janice.
Yes, good morning to you, Mo, and everyone. My name is Janice PM, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Yeah, now, see, Bill is in the process, just like I was in the process, like I was on a seesaw. Oh, yeah, I could see, you know, the proof of Bebby. He was starry-eyed and glowing, and but as soon as he said he had religion, now he's saying, oh, now he's down on the seesaw. He's just a rebellious man like I was. If anybody told me what to do, how to do it, I would rebel because I had my own thinking. But what Bill is doing here is he's starting to open his mind. He's starting to be teachable. You know, he's talking for hours and hours, and he's going back to his grandfather, Griffith, I think his name was, and he brought him up, you know, until 12 years old, since 12. And, you know, the grandfather had a higher power, but he didn't want these preachers to tell him how to believe. This is what it's all about. And so naturally, my grandmother, you know, my mother sent me to a religious school, and that's how I had to believe. In their type, they defined a God, a higher power. And, of course, I rebelled. How can it be if this is going on, all this stuff? But you see, he felt a certain feeling. Bill felt a certain feeling. His mind went back to that cathedral. And if we notice on page 2, when he went back there at the very beginning, God, a divine spirit, presented himself to Bill because he had a presence, a certain presence at that time. And perhaps he's going back and thinking, yeah, you know what, maybe, you know what, there is somebody. But it's the religious idea. As long as we don't tell anybody this is how you have to believe, you know, then we're pretty good, we're pretty all right. So it's the denial of the preacher's right, you know, to tell anybody how he must believe. And then that's when I rebel too. But he did have a certain comfort from that thinking of that cathedral when he was there, if we read it over again. So he's becoming teachable. His mind is open and his mind is closed. But this is the process that I had to get to, you know, to know what to do, to how to believe in a power. I knew that I needed something because nothing else worked. Alcohol was his higher power. Certain foods was my higher power, but that didn't work. So, you know, Ebby was proof. So he's starting to open up, and he's not, you know, he's not hearing what to believe, how to believe, but we'll
fine.
See. Yes. And so with that, I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice PM. Terry H., followed by Rebecca T. Terry.
Hi, everyone. My name is Terry H., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, bulimic, anorexic, in rainy, cold, wet North Carolina. Very grateful to be able to share today on the line. You know, this brings me back, you know, of course, to childhood memories. As a recovered woman today, my best thing in recovery today is my connection with my higher power, and it's constantly growing and strengthening, and I'm really grateful for that. You know, I went through that gamut of I grew up in one religion, jumped around the religion and religion, chasing that, you know, God or whatever was out there, and, you know, then went through the period of not believing in anything. And today, you know, and my disease, you know, it just really brought me down to that place where I ran out of all options. You know, I tried everything. I ran out of all options. You know, I was dying. I was dying. And so I had that willingness, you know. A person told me, you know, you need to get in back into OA or you're going to die. And so I had that little bit of willingness to go back to the meetings, and I started to be open and hearing what other people had to say, kind of like Bill listening to Abby in this and just listening and hearing and trying to draw up my own conceptions. You know, God was, my higher power was always there, but it took me to do the work and to clear the blocks, to work the steps, clear out all that yuck between me and my higher power so I can have that connection today. You know, life is rolling on for me today, and I'm really enjoying and experience so many new freedoms with my higher power today. And, you know, and to be able to define that for myself, yeah, I can pick from here and pick from there and pick from here, but, you know, to be able to define that for myself has been amazing, and it has allowed me to continue to grow with that connection. But you know what? I had to do the work. I had to clean it up. I had to have that willingness and, you know, be vulnerable, put myself out there, you know, go to meetings, listen to my sponsor, read the big book, you know, and be part of, you know, that, because I couldn't do it by myself. I could not do it by myself. And so, you know, I'm constantly reminded of that today, each and every day. You know, just like Bill and his grandfather, you know, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. You know, being fearless is amazing. To have the freedom around that today and to be able to talk about that and that experience is just amazing. And, you know, I'm just really grateful. For the newcomer, don't, you know, just be open. Just have a little bit of willingness and to listen and to hear. And by all means, you get to create your higher power as to whatever you want it to be, as long as it's not you. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry H. Rebecca T., followed by John K. Good morning, Rebecca.
Hey, guys. It's Rebecca T. from Bakersfield, California, Grateful Recovered One Day at a Time. I definitely... You know, I heard something from a fellow the other day, and he was talking about no longer having the control and then no longer having a choice. And, you know, that resonated with me because it wasn't until I actually got to that point where I saw that I truly did have, I didn't have the control anymore and I no longer had a choice. Which means I had to give up me, you know, me, my thought of, you know, me playing God, me running the show, me and my opinions and how I best thought things should be, me as to when I would let God in and when I needed to do the job. So, you know, there was so much of that. I believed in a God, like, you know, Bill was talking about people and, you know, that he had learned from, and I believed in a faith, but it was still about, when I was going to let him in and when it was an appropriate time. I'm not quite so sure I believed, maybe I think I believed in, things that, you know, miracles that happened to other people. but I think I thought them as more mystical and, you know, once in a while it would occur. I didn't believe that that would occur in me. And I saw so many people that in my family that had a faith, but yet where they weren't showing it in their walk, and their life certainly didn't seem calm or relaxed, even though they believed in, you know, a God. So I thought I was the same, that just as long as I plugged away and kept, you know, doing my due diligence in this life, that I would, you know, then I would get what I want. I would get the result. I would get the freedom. I would get the mental clarity. So, of course, I tried all of that and several times in relapse and never got any of it. So, thankfully, it was because I did have to say I have absolutely no control and I have no choice, that I thought, okay, I'm going to give this higher power thing a try. And I didn't know how that looked. I didn't know how to think, how to believe, how to feel. But I just took the slow, gentle steps of my sponsors and all of my recovered fellows around me, and I just did what they told me and then just continued to give it up every single day, not really knowing how that looked.
Fine.
And so thank you for letting me share. Bye.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rebecca. John K., followed by Marilyn T. John.
Good morning. My name is John Kiernan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. You know, this line he writes in here about my grandfather's good-natured contempt for church folks and their doing and his insistence that his fears really had their music, but denial of preacher's right. Very poetic way of putting the way I felt when I came into my first program, because I certainly believed in all of the precepts of the religion to which I was born. And I'm, most other religions have wonderful precepts. It was, I don't then need to be told what that means, you know, to read quotes from things and say, well, here's what it means. I understood. And I think the main problem was I had conflated at least the ideas of a religion with the people around who, you know, represented it. And I would watch these news stories of high, you know, of various people in religious positions getting in all kinds of trouble, and it managed to reinforce all the negative ideas I had as an agnostic. It's so funny. I used to say I was an atheist, and then, you know, I read these definitions that an atheist believes absolutely that there's no God, and an agnostic says, I don't know. And I always joke that I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, you know, because an atheist, think about it, you have to say there is no God, you know, how can you prove that? You can't, you know, the only thing you can do is come back and say, well, there is, but that's not the thing. But anyway, I used to always think of myself as very forward-looking and without any prejudice of anything, you know, religion or, you know, ethnic stuff, gay, this or that. But I realized how prejudiced I was against all religion. And, you know, I had to sort of change my way of thinking about that. And part of it was I sort of had it shoved down my throat, for lack of a better way. And I think most of us do. We don't get a chance to come to a belief. You know, we are told this is what you do. And, you know, I did a special edition on, you know, helping agnostics find a higher power thing. And one of the things I in my research was reading this thing from William James, the person that Bill quoted a lot. And it said, you know, essentially we get told what to do, and it's been told by the people who told us, by their parents, et cetera. And we, you know, we have a hand-me-down God, and we needed to be able to strip all that away and get back to thinking about things differently. Don't take that word God and make it mean one thing. You know, again, I would listen to the, you know, I read the stories about the preachers going to jail, and to see that's what religion is. No, there's plenty of good, so much more good going on than anything negative. But again, that just helped, you know, I would focus on that, what they call confirmation bias. It reinforced my existing beliefs, and I needed to get rid of that because, I'll wrap it up, as much as I did not, like I did about how I heard power then, I so desperately needed it because I couldn't do it myself. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, John K. Marilyn T., followed by Robin P. Good morning, Marilyn.
Thank you, Mo. This is Marilyn T., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. And when I'm reading this, what does bring it up is more pertinent for me is just having to separate the past, which would be my upbringing and religious teachings, into more of a present. And that's what makes me think about when he talks about Winchester Cathedral, which is the doggerel that's at the beginning of Bill's story. Is this really the way I want to die? From not having any emotional control, any physical control over food, letting it rule my life, letting me rule my life? Or am I willing to believe in something, a new concept of a higher power? And that's kind of how I look at that for me, is I have to condemnation before investigation, Herbert Spencer. You have to give something a chance. You have to be willing to look at something differently, really differently, to expand your concept of what a higher power is. And so as not a new person coming into OA, but coming back to OA, even though I never left the rooms, but actually working the steps and using them in my life, am I willing to have my higher power be something that I use in all parts of my life, my personal, my business, my OA life, all the different aspects of it? Can I treat everyone the way they should be treated, with kindness, love, patience, and tolerance? And it has changed my life. So I ask the newcomer to have an open mind. Don't discard something before you've even tried it. Open your heart, because the mind is easily misrepresented. It's easily distracted. Open your mind, you know, to enough to let your heart in, to have a new way of thinking. And this can absolutely change your life. I promise you. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn T. And before we take Robin P., I'll just remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 10. Starting with the first paragraph, he talked for hours, reading through two paragraphs, ending, Winchester Cathedral came back again, and the comments are on both. And I'll take Robin P. now. Thank you, Robin.
Hi, thank you. Thank you. Hi, this is Robin P., and thank you so much for this wonderful meeting. You know, I grew up a devout atheist. I was raised that a proud atheist. My dad was an atheist. His mother was Jewish, and his father was French Catholic. And when they got married, they put a candle in the window and said that she was dead and she was never allowed to see her family again. And so we were raised atheists, and because it was religion, not spirit. And I had a spiritual awakening of the profound variety, and which led me to the Lord. And, you know, wow, the good news is I haven't had any preconceived notions. You know, I'm not a recovering Catholic or any of those things I've heard about, you know. And I also got to learn everything anew and just keep saying, well, what do I believe? And it's been a process and a path for me, my spiritual experience with God, as I understand God today. It's just, it's a process, it's a relationship. And I heard a priest talk about how, you know, how would I have a relationship with somebody that I was in love with, you know, and how would I want to get to know them? How would I want them to get to know me? How would I want to spend time with them? And so I believe that it's such a part of my program, that 11th step. And the third step, I always love that it says, you know, to the care of God. I grew up with such it looked in my house like if there was a God and there was a Satan, it always looked like Satan won. There was so much violence. And so for me to know that God, you know, loves everybody, and, you know, even the abusers, even the disruptors, everybody. And so that's been a huge blessing for me, to just keep remembering to be tolerant, loving, and patient, and kind. And also to have boundaries, so that balance. But so I just, with my relationship with God and then praying only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out, it keeps it so much more simpler for me than the way it used to be. Maybe I'm supposed to do, maybe I'm supposed to do, like that mental obsession with the mind chatter. And, you know, I have had many miracles and many spiritual experiences in my life, and I still get to practice my faith on a daily basis. So God bless everybody in your recovery. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Robin P., and I'll now open the lines up for those who'd like to share.
Donna W.
Donna
Elaine
W.
B.
Elaine B.
Rachel P.
Rachel P.
Julie E.B.
Julie E.B.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. That might be all we can take. I'll stop there. Donna W., Elaine B., Rachel P., Julie E.B., and Kathleen O. Donna W., we'll get started.
Thank you so much, Mo. This is Donna W. calling from Palo Alto, California, and standing in the sunlight of the Spirit today. Literally, I'm standing in the sunlight, so that feels good. And, you know, this reading and the commentary today is making me think about the step two of the AA, 12 and 12, when it talks about it's not the quantity of faith, it's the quality of faith. And for me, you know, I grew up believing in God. I recently found out that I'm the only one in my family that believes in God, although my family members are more religious than me. But I've always believed in God, but God was always kind of over there, out there somewhere. And so programs, you know, been a challenge for me because I need to rely on God and make God really a part of my life. And probably the biggest religion I grew up was that, you know, to be a strong, independent woman. That was probably the biggest kind of religious focus. So that's you know, my go-to is I got to figure it all out on my own. It's all up to me, being self-reliant. So every day that's a reminder for me that, oh, I can be God-centered instead of self-centered. I can be God-reliant instead of self-reliant. I can be God-seeking instead of self-seeking today, because at times the stress out is where I go, and that I can really check in with God about everything. So that is a continual learning process for me. My sponsors reminded me that, you know, I need to rather than telling my higher power how big my problems are, I need to tell my problems how big my higher power is. And I need to keep making sure my higher power is big enough, because I can easily get overwhelmed by life. And yesterday I remembered a very short prayer that really connects me with my higher power, which is just to say, thank you, God. Like, I had a big day out in the city yesterday, and on my way home, I just said, thank you, God. It's like, oh yeah, you know, my higher power is putting all this together for me. And just when I can have that humility just to say, thank you, God, throughout the day, that really levels me. You know, when I get into that, all that, ego, if I got to figure it all out, boy, that really, that's the beginning of my illness for sure. So I'm really grateful to learn not just how to eat, but also how to rely on a power greater than myself through this program. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna W. Elaine B., followed by Rachel P. Elaine.
Thank you so much for your service, Mo, and everybody on the line and fielding our interesting challenges. So, you know, if just a food plan was all I needed to get and keep 100 pounds off my body for as many years as I have, then, I'd be in a right-sized body, but all the things that were happening to me that drove me to food over and over again were going to keep on happening. I went back to Bill's story at the beginning, and it says that, you know, he learned about drink, and he discovered a part of his life at last, and he was excited at discovering liquor, and you know, he forgot some of the bad things people warned him, but there he was, you know, shipping off in the service, and he was very lonely again. He turned to alcohol. He was in England, and he visited Winchester Cathedral. He was much moved when he went. So, you know, we look for an outside solution for an inside problem. That much move was perhaps his higher power saying, there's more for you, there's more for you, I'm here for you. And yet, you know, the impact of other people on our lives and our relationship and our openness to God, when I came to doing the steps, I had a relationship with my higher power, and I was kind of afraid of allowing myself to define my own understanding of God, because it's kind of, it is written kind of deal. But I knew I needed more, and this is a spiritual solution. So I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a try. And that's where I discovered that I had blocked myself off from an entire aspect of God because of my relationship with my dad. And it was, I was very young. I was like 8 years old when I went into my self-will-run riot because he wasn't doing things my way. And so I'm going to block him out. I'm not going to seek his counsel. I'm not going to seek his input. I'm not going to seek his, you know, whatever. Although I did want his money. And, you know, I liked the donuts and ice cream that he bought me, and so that equaled love. But as I allowed my higher power to be supersized, I began to see that was that doing the steps is where I realized how much I had blocked my father off and how much I had blocked part of God. I couldn't trust. I couldn't believe. I couldn't believe that God had my best interest in mind. And one of the greatest, I love this, is I call it the great bait and switch in this whole program, really, it's on page 42, right at the end. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. And I have problems every day. So one day without God, God knows it because God cares. He wants a relationship with me. He's constantly pursuing me no matter where I am. 2 days without God, I know it. I start to feel squirrely. But 3 days without God, everybody knows it. And you know where that ends up. You seek and ease and comfort in all the wrong places. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine B. Rachel P., followed by Julie E. B. Rachel.
Good morning. This is Rachel P., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. My mom was a woman of faith, hardcore. I grew up Episcopalian and going to church every Sunday. I mean, my brother's name is Christian. That's how devout she was. And I grew up going to church every Sunday, and it was routine for me. You know, religion was important to our family, and I played along because I didn't know that I had a choice. And then when I was about 12 years old, I started to question everything. And I said to my mom at one point, you know, I said, when I pray every night, I don't feel like I'm praying to anyone. And she didn't know how to respond to that. She was just like, oh, that's weird. Because she felt the faith, and I couldn't. And she didn't understand why. And she didn't know how to work around that. So a couple years later, actually, my mother committed suicide when I was 14. And after she passed, I turned away from religion. You know, I had already started to question. And at that moment, when she died, I was like, I'm off the hook. I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to pretend anymore. I can turn away from this God thing. You know, and I became an atheist, a very devout atheist. You know, I was so certain that there was nothing out there. I completely rejected anything to do with religion or spirituality. And I was struggling with the food. At 17 years old, I was up to 275 pounds. You know, my disease was in full force, and I wanted nothing to do with God. And at about 22, 23 years old, I came to my first OA meeting. You know, it took a lot for me to get there. It really did. And I got there and I heard the word God, and I thought, nope, this is not for me. Absolutely not. If this solution has anything to do with God, I'm out. And so I turned away, and I turned back to control. And I lost 100 pounds on my own, in, you know, being in control. But I was still miserable, so miserable. And so 9.5 months, I started to see a therapist, and she told me to go to OA, and I was ready. I came into the room, and it was finally at the point where things had happened in my life that I was ready to hear it. I couldn't use the word God. I would not. 9.5 months ago, I used the word trust. It just had to be something greater than myself, you know. And the way in which I had turned away from religion, I don't do that anymore necessarily. Part of my amends was to not gossip and talk about religious people. But religion is not for me. Right now, spirituality is. And I've been able to find a higher power, and I do use the word God now. And with all of those experiences that I had, with religion and spirituality brought me to this point, and I am so, so, so grateful that it was ready when I came into the rooms and I was able to do the work. And thank you all for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Rachel P., Julie E.B., and followed by Kathleen O.
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered one day at a time, usually in Colorado Springs, today in Washington, and Washington State. I'm just very grateful as I see the beauty all around me that I have an increasing conscious contact with my higher power, an increasing awakeness. And for me, that's what this section is talking about. When I came, my spiritual awakening really occurred when I came to the bottom, page 25, and it said there was no middle of road solution. I could either continue on as I was, continue on. I was doing the best I could, blotting out my consciousness, my awakeness of my intolerable situation as best I could, or seek spiritual help. So that's what my life had been about up to this point, blotting out my awakeness, blotting it out in food and people-pleasing and perfectionism and playing around with money, all sorts of things, but primarily with the food, always blotting out, never enough food. And if I wasn't blotting out with the food, I was blotting it out with the diet. And there was never enough control. There was never the perfect diet. And so there I went. And what I hear in Bill's story here is now he just is starting to get this awakeness in seeking spiritual help and being exposed to spiritual things. All of a sudden, he has this awakeness, and he's re-looking through his life, almost like it tells us in the fourth step. We look from a different angle. All of a sudden, he's re-looking at his life through a different angle. He's seen what happened in Winchester. He's seen what happened in his childhood. He's seen not what didn't happen for him in his childhood, which is how I always looked at it before, but he's seen an awakeness of how he was, had glimpses, had opportunities, had a higher power watching over him. After all, as a hopeless case, he is a person who found a life of happy usefulness. Maybe not the grandeur he imagined in his youth, nor do I have the grandeur I imagined in my youth. I just day by day, whatever city I'm in, just traveling for a little bit, whatever city I'm in, I wake up, I hit the 11-step prayer, I turn on the meeting, I have my abstinent breakfast, I do my meditation, I do my moving meditation and exercise, I go through my day, I reach out, I receive outreach, I just live the routines of programming, and along the way, I'm awake, increasingly awake, not to what my problem, my intolerable situation is, because it was intolerable, maybe not for everyone but for me, but I'm awake to the fact that there's something caring for and protecting me. Thanks for letting me share. Sorry I went over. Pass.
All right. Thank you, Julie E.B. Kathleen O., you'll close us out. Kathleen.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service this morning. And everyone on the line, these are great shares. So, and I'll try to keep this short. I know we're coming towards the end here. You know, the childhood memories rose before me, and I had a lot of childhood memories of religion and being what I call dragged to church every Sunday. And, you know, I just never got it. I don't know what it was, but I didn't get it. My parents were religious and I was not, and kind of fought it tooth and nail until I was old enough to say, adios, I'm out of here. And, you know, for Bill, he was getting desperate here. He was just getting desperate, and it was like, okay, I'm desperate. Maybe I should take a look at something. And that wartime day of old Winchester Cathedral coming back, you know, he visited that cathedral near the end of World War I and noticed that gravestone with the words that young soldier who died a violent fever contracted from drinking small beer when hot. And I heard once that that was that young soldier drank beer that wasn't quite, they did a distilling thing to purify the water and it wasn't quite distilled. He died of alcohol poisoning. Maybe he just drank too much. I don't know. And the fact that his name was Thomas Thatcher, kind of close to his friend, Ebbie Thatcher, who, you know, helped him really kind of see the light here. So, you know, at, like Bill, I mean, his career took a dive because he's drinking. He knew he either had to be locked up or permanently or he's going to die. That's what he was told. And, you know, Ebbie comes back and just kind of puts this out here. And it really is all about just taking a look, you know, can I, maybe there is something bigger than me. And I know for me, I knew there was something bigger. It wasn't the whole church thing I was trying to, you know, figure out, which wasn't working for me. But, you know, when I would go into nature, I grew up in the Redwoods, and when I would go hiking, there was something big and magnificent that I could always feel. And that's kind of what I grabbed onto and got me started in this program. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Mo.
Hey, thank you, Kathleen. That was perfect. I would like to thank all those who were on the meeting today and shared. This was great, another great meeting. Those who gave service, Rachel P., Libby E., Pia S., Ellen D., and Robin Jo B. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Ellen D. please read A Vision for You?
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.